Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we are talking about the book Dreaming in Spanish. It's a memoir, and on the show today, it's our first book in the 2024 Book Club series. Great to have you with us, Larry Mueller here, as I said, and with us in the studio is the book's author, Sarah Alvarado. She's a writer, speaker, she's an advocate for working for racial equity in real estate. She published the Racial Justice Toolkit for Real Estate Professionals, a guide for change agents, and lots of articles and essays. So as we talk with her about her book, Dreaming in Spanish, I hope you'll join in. Did you get a chance to read the book? What would you like to ask Sarah? Maybe you have similar experiences you'd like to share, whether you read the book or not, as you listen in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Sarah Alvarado, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you here in person. I loved your book, so
thank
we
you.
Start with that.
Woo-hoo.
And I love the title, Reading in Spanish. Did you come up with that title? Or, I mean, I thought it fit the book perfectly.
It actually was the last thing. The book was written, and I had a title that was on hold. It wasn't the right title. And a lot of people have the title before they have the book. I definitely had the book before I had the title. It was on the list. It was on a short list. And then I had the owner of Mystery to Me Bookstore, Joanne, mm-hmm. She read the book. She read the manuscript before it was published. And I was talking to her about it. And it was actually on her short list because we were talking about titles. And I was like, that's it. If it was on my short list and it was on her short list, it was the one.
Yeah. And the subtitle, of course, An Unexpected Love Story in Puerto Vallarta. You know what? We could start just to sort of set the stage. It wouldn't hurt to start maybe from your prologue.
Sure.
Because I think that's kind of sets things up a little bit.
All right, I'll just jump right into reading.
Why not?
Okay, prologue. I have lived most of my life in a place where the four seasons are distinct, sometimes extreme, and always telling. This story is from a season in my life that was incredibly distinct, pretty extreme, and quite telling. It is my story, told from my memory and recounted from numerous journals. Some names have been changed, some have not. Memory is tricky. In writing this memoir, there were times I called on my memory or read through my journals and could feel exactly where I was at that moment in time. The veil was so thin. While other times the distance between now and then was as extreme as a Wisconsin winter and a Puerto Vallarta summer, almost impossible to comprehend, yet quite possible to work through. This book couldn't have been written without sharing traumas from my past that may be hard to read. My content warning includes substance abuse, sexual assault, rape, and unexamined privileges. As a white woman in my mid-20s, I was incredibly brave and introspective while also lacking significant cultural and racial awareness. This story is from a time when the privileges I was born with that I hadn't earned were tucked under the rug, supporting me without direct acknowledgement or a deeper understanding of harm and impact. The corners of the rug were beginning to curl up slightly, while so much was yet to be revealed. In being truthful to who I was during this time, I show the self-confidence my mom instilled in me that as a woman is likely unrecognizable to my ancestors. I also show the ignorance and entitlement that often comes with whiteness, which the next generations will likely be appalled by. I'm embarrassed to show some of who I was back then, and it's scary to do so publicly. There are some ugly truths and a limited perspective, but also deep wisdom and limitless love, both and. I'm grateful for the learning and support from my friends, healers, coaches, and teachers I've worked with to complete this book, and I'm grateful for the love and healing I've experienced in writing and sharing the story.
It's a wonderful way, I think it's a wonderful way to start this conversation. You know, maybe another way to do it, too, to add to that, is to talk about the book. It's in four parts.
Mm-hmm.
How did you, maybe you could briefly describe the four parts, and that gives us sort of a timeline.
Okay. So it starts off when I'm flying to Mexico, and so I start kind of in the middle, like it's not where you were to get to where you were. And so the beginning part is a lot of where I was in the moments of realizing who I wanted to be and how to get there, but also a lot of flashbacks. So it's actually the first 100 pages is place-based flashbacks, location. And the second part, I don't have this memorized, Larry. I can tell you about the book, but the second part is likely when Carlos and I fell in love.
You met Carlos, meeting Carlos and your experiences in Puerto Vallarta.
Yeah. I mean, if I tell you a lot, I mean, we'll have some spoil. I mean, obviously, Carlos and I are still together, so. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, that's the second part. The third part is moving on with a pregnancy.
Yeah, I got
knocked
up.
Which is there you go.
Unexpected.
And you haven't been there very long either.
No. The timeline is very, very, it's packed full.
Yeah, and then of course the after part is after the pregnancy and comments.
The last part is really around the multicultural integration of me having a baby in Mexico and bringing our families together.
You know, and it's like what, 6 months or eight?
I arrived in December of 99. Okay, arrived in December of 99. I started, I took my last drink in February.
Yeah.
I had met Carlos in the end of January. So that was the pretty quick one. And then by May was pregnant and August was married. And then Alex was born in January of 2001.
Yeah, when you were 25. So 24 when you first went down there. And you were, maybe talk about why you were going there. I mean, there were a lot of things that you were kind of maybe running away from, but other things, but you were also running to something maybe.
Yeah. And that had been a pattern. So I was scared that I was running, that I couldn't run. Like, how many times can you physically leave a place to go find something else and end up where you were? So I think I was pretty aware of that, but I had been really struggling with drugs and alcohol and a party scene, mostly just this party lifestyle. And I had been sexually assaulted in about 6 months earlier and then drugged and raped a couple of weeks before I left for Puerto Vallarta.
Yeah. And you were kind of running away from that life and I think running away thinking maybe you could clean yourself up in terms of alcohol and so forth. But then you chose, and I'm thinking, why would you choose Puerto Vallarta if you're going to get away from, and not so much from the people, the citizens there, but from the life of people like us who go there for vacation and just to have a good time. And so there's all kinds. I have friends who spent time in Puerto Vallarta, and some of them were kind of hazy in their recollections of everything that went on.
And there is a party scene there, which I found, a couple days upon arriving. But there also was the ocean, and there was a country that I really wanted to learn about and know, and I wanted to dream in Spanish. And so there was a connection to the ocean and the land and the culture that was calling to me. And, there's party everywhere you go.
Yeah, there is. If you're looking for it, you can find it. And you were a Spanish major.
Yep. I had gotten my major in Spanish from the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. So, I could understand and read and write really well, but I sounded like I spoke Spanish from Minnesota. So I was like, how can I get my speaking skills better?
Ended every sentence with yeah. No. And this book really does bare your soul. And it felt like, this is about a 10-year period here, but it's really a very, very short period of in your life. But it expands out because you're thinking back and looking at spirit experiences back from your childhood and every place else. It must have taken a lot of time and to write this, because all your family, both families, your family in Mexico and your family here are going to be reading this, and it really seems really pretty darn truthful to me. I mean, you don't seem to spare too much in terms of your own thoughts.
I believe that shining a light on truth helps set us free. And I didn't really want to be defined by my trauma. I don't feel like I am. And I think a lot of people have that kind of weight on them. And to be able to share it and be who you are out in the world, it's liberating. And I'm tired of people keeping secrets because they're worried about what other people will think and how it will define them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought to myself, well, if my mother had written a memoir, I'm not sure with a story that you tell,
yeah.
And you know your son Alex, how did he do?
There's been a lot of transparency.
I'm sure he read it.
He read it. My other son didn't. Family members don't always read your books, and that's totally fine. Alex definitely read it, and he said he appreciated knowing our love story mostly. You know, I'd been very open about my sexual assaults, just as a mother raising kids. You know, I feel like it's something that we need to do. He appreciated it, which I was grateful for. I did need his blessing. And Carlos, too. I mean, kudos to Carlos for being incredibly supportive and always. Yeah, there were many times I was like, I'm not going to publish it. I'm not going to publish it. And he was the one that was like, yes, you are. You want to. It's your dream. Do it.
So in the first part of your book, you're there's a lot going on in your life, and you kind of have a plan. Or you think you have a plan. I remember an AA member said, Sarah, it seems there's a lot in your life that's not in your plan. Which I love that statement. There's a lot in your life that's not in your plan.
Yeah. For me, one of the main themes is surrender. So, like, we can plan all day long, but sometimes life is going to throw us curveballs, and surrendering and rolling with it, that's been a really important theme in my life, which actually I've gone back to many, many times. When things don't go the way I plan them to go, then I'm like, okay, God, what do you got for me? I'm here. I can roll with it.
And how would you describe yourself at that time as a 24-year-old?
I was introspective, and I really wanted a deeper spiritual understanding. I wanted to have more connection. I wanted to feel like I was authentic with who I was and living in alignment. I didn't really know what that meant at that time, but that's what I wanted. And maybe it was because my mom had it. So I had an example of it.
Well, I thought as I was reading that, well, you were a lot more introspective than I sure the heck was when I was 23, 24 years old. So I kind of admired you for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were, all right, like everybody, we have our problems. Mm-hmm. Some are harder than others, but you've clung to that introspective part that I didn't. So I admire that.
Yeah, let's give props to my mom for that.
Yeah, talk about your mother a bit. Your mother plays a huge role in the book.
Oh my gosh, I love my mom so much. Yes, she does. I couldn't not have her be a main character in this book. She was my spiritual teacher, and so watching her, but not because she taught me, it was because she was on her own learning journey, and I watched it, and I got to witness it. And then she would whisper the whisperings in my own ear around, you know, things happen, and we can decide, we can choose how we're going to handle it, what we're going to do next. You can choose. There were just, you know, her angel cards and her way of looking at life and her determination to love, just that was it. That was the most important thing. And she has so much, she had so much peace in her.
Yeah. So that really comes through.
Yeah. I'm glad.
That really comes through. Sarah Alvarado, our guest today. She's a writer, a speaker, an advocate working for racial equity. Her book is titled Dreaming in Spanish. And I hope you'll add the subtitle, An Unexpected Love Story in Puerto Vallarta. You can join in with your questions, comments, maybe your own experiences. Love to hear from you. The number to call, 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. Ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today. Lee Rayburn, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today as we talk with our guest author, Sarah Alvarado, about her memoir. It's titled Dreaming in Spanish, An Unexpected Love Story in Puerto Vallarta. Again, you can join in. Email us to ideas@WPR.org or give a call. Love to hear from you. The number is 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. And emailed who read the book, said, this is a great book, and yes, the title certainly fits. She says she was raised in a similar privileged Madison life and can relate to it so much. And thank you for sharing your story, Sarah.
Thanks, Ann.
That is a very, very nice comment. And you know, all right, so your parents were multimillionaires, but your family did, and my family too, we lived a privileged life.
Yeah, I mean, privilege, there's a lot of ways to look at privilege, right?
Yes.
Like socioeconomic, education, safety. So a lot of the privileges I'm talking about are, you know, the whiteness, understanding that. And we are not really taught to talk about or think about our privileges, at least back then.
Right.
In the 80s. So I think being able to, that was actually one of the hardest parts writing the book, is I wanted to tell this story, but I couldn't tell it without really addressing who I was back then. So going through some of my journals, I was like, oh my God, Sarah, what? And I chose not to skip over them. I really wanted to find a way to incorporate, yeah, this is the real truth. This is who I was, not proud of it. And we can change when we learn to understand it.
You know, as I was reading it, I was trying to think of a memoir, and I'm thinking about those who are family members who are going to read it. And I said, well, she could have made a novel out of this. And then I thought, no, it's too far-fetched. There's too much that happens. People would say, this can't happen.
Right. Seriously.
So yeah. I'm glad you made it a memoir. Don in Iron River, your turn. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling.
Say, I took Italian in 4 semesters at the UW, and I liked that title of the book, Dreaming in Spanish. When I started dreaming in Italian language, that's when I became very fluent.
Yeah.
That's an indicator. That's when you know you really got it, when you dream in Spanish. It's like the ultimate dream when you're hoping to learn another language.
Yeah. And is that when you, like for you, is that when you really feel like you had it?
I mean,
pretty excited. You ran to tell Carlos,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I was totally excited. Yeah, I mean, it just it means that your brain is working differently, right? I mean, kids who grow up bilingual, they dream back and forth all the time, and it's like no big deal. But to learn a second language when you're older, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah. Don, thanks for calling. Dreaming in Italian. There's your book, Don. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, you know, just going back to Puerto Vallarta, you had no idea what you were going to do. I mean, how to earn a living.
Yeah, I mean, I knew my options were very limited. So teaching English, which actually, when you get a degree in Spanish, you don't know anything about teaching English. So that was an interesting challenge. But yeah, I didn't have Google. I didn't know. I had a book, you know, one of those guidebooks. I didn't even know that there were mountains in Puerto Vallarta when I landed. I didn't have very much time to research it. So it was quite... I took a leap.
And for your parents, and for your mother, you know, your mother said when you told her you were going to go, she said, well, good for you. Well, and now as a mom with young adults.
I love this question, Larry, because honestly, I have so many friends who have kids. You know, my kids are 19 and 23, and they're terrified of the decisions their kids are making. And I go back to, my mom trusted me. She trusted my journey. Maybe she didn't trust me, but she trusted my journey. She trusted that I would be able to make decisions and also bounce back from decisions that maybe weren't so great. And maybe she trusted herself that she would be there and that I would know to go to her if I did need, you know, to come back or whatever. So I don't doubt that she was terrified. And there are times when I'm terrified when my kids make decisions, but what greater gift to give your kids than to say, you know, I believe in you, and I believe you to make your own decisions.
Yeah, and that came from your mom.
Yeah.
What about your dad? You didn't have at least in the book, parts of the book, earlier parts of the book, it didn't seem you had a great relationship with your dad when you were younger. How did that change, or has that changed?
We have a lot in common. You know, we can talk business all day long, and he's been a solid rock in my life. I've learned a lot from him. So, you know, I think there definitely are challenging relationships in families. And again, I didn't want to pretend that things weren't the way they were. And so I told the best story I could based on what my experiences were.
And you titled your subtitle, I guess, is an unexpected love story. And there are different kinds of love stories in this for sure. The first one is how you met and married your husband. And talk about what it was like what it was about him that drew you to him.
Oh, what drew me to Carlos? I mean, we connected instantly as friends. I mean, I thought he was gay, so I thought he was a safe person to really just open up to. Clearly, he wasn't, and we connected on different levels. So Carlos and I, you know, I think we've had lifetimes together, and we balance each other out. We're really different. You know, where I'm extroverted and tell my story, I'm like an open book. He's private and much more reserved. And yet we support each other 100%.
Yeah, I saw that. There was a certain maturity that I, even back when you were 24, 25 years old, a maturity to the relationship.
He brought that, Larry.
I didn't have that myself.
Yeah, I did not
when I was
either.
That age.
I didn't either. And there's actually a story in the book that I tell that I just love so much, because it was really showing that we get to choose how we want our relationship to be. And he was the one that said, "I don't want name calling." I'd called him I don't think I can say it on the air, but I called him a bad word, and he was like, "Yeah, no." And I was like, well, but this is how it is. Like, when you get mad, you accidentally swear at each other. And he was like, no, we actually get to choose. And that was like, I was not, I wasn't mature enough at that point, but I wanted to be in a relationship with someone like that. Or I didn't know that I wanted that, but he brought that. And I was like, I'm in. Let's do it. Let's make our own decisions on how we want. And that's actually how we did religion and spirituality with our family, too. We didn't do what our parents did. We made up our own story.
And speaking of that, well, another part of the love story, let me do that first. It seems like, you know, you're finding your way to love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe talk about that journey and what was the hardest part of that?
I mean, I think that's the real love story of the book. You know, like, obviously, Carlos and I fall in love, and it's romantic and beautiful. But learning to love yourself is really your lifetime love story, because if you can't love yourself, how do you love others? And I didn't love myself because I was in such a destructive mode of life. And I would wake up hating what I had done the night before. And it was hard at that point in my life to differentiate my actions from who I was as a person. So, like, yeah, I was making mistakes, but that didn't mean that was who I was. And learning to take care of myself, like self-love is the goal, but self-care is really where you prove to yourself how to love yourself. And that really meant I needed to quit drinking. I needed to quit drinking, even though I didn't want to.
What helped you get the upper hand in that?
Well, first it came from my mom actually being super honest with me and saying, "Hey, hon, I think you're an alcoholic." And I was more of a binge drinker, you know, I wasn't like an everyday drinker. And she came at it from much more of a factual place. Like, here's how the brain works. Here's how addiction works. Here's how alcoholism works. It wasn't a, you're a bad person because, or you're never going to be any, you know, it wasn't like that. And so I was able to look at it from a logical, practical place. And then I was open to how to get better, right? Like, I went and found a book at the bookstore, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll, and then I talked to a friend about it, and she knew about AA meetings in Mexico. And so I was like, all right, these are all the signs pointing me in a direction I don't really want to go in, but this is where I'm going to go.
I wonder, has your experience in that along this helped you help others with addiction problems of any sort or not?
I don't know. I mean, it's not part of my career path in terms of, but I talk about it openly, and I don't hide anything.
Alfonso was an elderly student who taught you a simple way to meditate. And I found the process really cool. And the way you wrote it, so vivid, wonderful. It's a way to get to the present and away from the problems of the. You got? Is it in you to read it? read that?
And
you're teaching. By the way, I should just say you were teaching people English.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a traditional 15-year-olds or whatever students. These were a broad range of, and this one guy was Alfonso. You struck up some conversations with him over time.
I mean, he was my teacher. He ended up to be my teacher. And I love that about teaching and students and teachers. And we're all, okay. So Alfonso was an older man. And we were, I guess we became kind of became friends. Mm-hmm. And he taught me the value of slowing down. So I'm going to start on page 87. This is one of the first times that we'd hung out. While we sat on my front porch one morning after class, way above the city, he directed me to find a non-moving object in the distance or nearby to look at. Don't look at it hard. Look at it softly, so you can also see all around the object. I was looking at a spot on a rooftop. Then, as I relaxed, I started to notice the clouds moving, even though I hadn't taken my eyes off the spot on the roof. A bird flew within my sight. There was a parasail and boats. I started to see without directly looking at the movement. Now listen. What do you hear? There are layers of sounds, and as you listen carefully, you'll be able to notice each on its own individually. Alfonso said. He was practicing alongside me. I heard the buses. I heard the dogs. Not just one dog, but three barking dogs. I wondered if they were talking to each other. I heard neighbors chatting nearby and children yelling further down the hill. The sounds were layered and distanced. Have you listened to every sound there is to hear? He asked. I thought for a moment and listened again, noticing all the sounds I had identified. Yes, I replied. Now feel your senses. Feel the air on your skin, the hair on your head, your legs against the chair, your heart beating. And so I did. I felt the sweat on the back of my neck. I felt a fly land on my thigh. I felt my bra pinching under my arm. We sat there so still, so focused, and so relaxed at the same time, together but apart. This is the tool I use when I want to come back to the present moment, get grounded, and open my heart to messages beyond the human world. I use this time to connect with the divine, ask for support, and give gratitude to the universe and my higher spirit.
You know, that alone would be, to me, worth the price of the book.
There you go. You just got
it. I'm going to try that. I haven't done it yet.
You haven't?
I haven't done it yet, okay. But I intend to follow the Sarah Alvarado method of getting myself to the present and forgetting about all of the other little problems that may exist in my life. There's a thread of spirituality that runs through your book. And it seems important to you, or it seemed at the time to be important to you.
Yeah, I mean, it still is important to me. I wouldn't call it a spiritual teaching book at all, but it was definitely the story of how I learned to be able to connect and live a more intentionally spiritual life, for whatever that is. I didn't grow up religious, so I didn't have a church or a temple to go to every week. I didn't have that community. But I saw my mom and she had a spiritual life. And I was like, I want that.
Yeah. And your mom was Jewish, I believe. Mm-hmm. And your dad was,
he was raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm. So that's the situation you were in as you grew up. So you were kind of, in a way, I suppose, had a chance to look at pretty broad differences.
Yeah. My mom's side of the family is very Jewish, and my dad's side of the family is very Catholic. And so I think also having that mixed experience, I had a friend in third grade one time tell me, well, you can't be both. Because she was like, are you Jewish or Catholic? And I was like, well, I'm both. And she was like, you can't be both. And I was like, well, I am. Like, you can't really tell me what I can and can't be. But, you know, there is this concept. And raising kids who are both, you know, Mexican and have my heritage, Irish, Jewish, you can be a lot of things.
Sarah Alvarado, our guest today, and her book is titled Dreaming in Spanish. Love to hear from you. Give us a call or shoot us an email. You can call us with your own thoughts, maybe your own experiences. Love to hear them. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You haven't had a chance to read Dreaming in Spanish yet. I hope you get that chance. Sarah Alvarado, our guest today, we're talking about it's our first book club selection of the year, and it's really great to have her with us today. Number to call, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to the phones. Rochelle in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. I just really am loving this conversation with Sarah. I lived abroad when I was 15 years old for a semester, and I really love Sarah's comment because it was such a gift for my family to trust me and my judgment and my decisions at this time, because living abroad is such a unique experience.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Comment on that, Sarah?
I mean, yeah, just in terms of how we're raising our kids, it's not normal to trust them. Like, we're at, like, this concept of hierarchy and, well, I know what's best for you. And how do we know what's best for somebody?
You know, thank you so much, Rochelle. I was thinking back because at about the same time you were in Puerto Vallarta, I was in Trinidad and Tobago working on an agency for international development project. I was older than 25 for sure. It was quite an eye-opening experience to me. And when I came back, I started an exchange program with the University of the West Indies. And over the years, many hundreds of students have some from Trinidad here in the fall term when it's still fairly warm, and our students going to Trinidad in the
I mean, it's critical to open. How else do you open your mind and your heart to just see that, yes, we're all so different and so the same?
Yeah. But I also, probably like Rochelle, I you know, we always had exit interviews with the folks, and even down the road a bit, I would check back in or learn, you know, hear from the students who left, because they all had to take a class from me before they went.
Mm.
And 99 out of 100 would say, well, you know, that was the best experience of my whole life.
Yeah.
Of my whole schooling.
You're right. And it's terrifying. Like, you're so scared, and then it ends up to be the best thing.
John in Mount Horeb, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Well, I was just saying, interesting interview, probably interesting book. But I just, there's just one thing that just kind of jarred me a bit. And that is the description of privilege, which is very much a part of this book, but describing it as white privilege. And there's a lot of whites and people of other races who aren't privileged, and mixing race in with a description of what's going on here is one of those things that kind of divides society needlessly. And so I just think, about that, you know, why labeling it as white privilege is a really important part of it, and maybe just leave the white part out and concentrate on privilege and the rest of an otherwise good story. And that's really my concern of just seeing an overused word out there.
Well, John, thank you very much for calling. Sarah, an interesting comment. What do you think?
I mean, do we talk about socioeconomic privileges? I mean, what privilege, like, if we're talking about privileges, why wouldn't we define what different kinds of privileges we're talking about? I mean, if I don't understand how I show up in a room based on the privilege of the color of my skin, then it's pretty unaware. Like, it's like this colorblind concept is actually harmful. It's not that I'm dividing. It's that I can see that I'm treated differently when I walk into a doctor's appointment. And if I am understanding that, and then I can see how other people are treated differently, then I can step in and say, hey, why is this happening? It is needless. It doesn't need to happen. It is a construct. And yet not talking about it seems pretty harmful.
Yeah. All right. John, thank you for calling. Let's go to Rich in Two Rivers. Hi, Rich.
Yeah. Hey, Larry. Yeah. I got kind of a question. I don't know if Sarah could answer it or not, but, nobody's been around alcohol more than I have my whole life. I ended up growing up in New York. My dad owned a bar. My mother was from Scotland. Alcohol was just a common lifestyle. And it caused many problems in my life. And I always knew it was a problem. And I also knew that I needed to correct it someday or I would die from it, and which I did. And it wasn't that long ago. It was within a year. And my question is, I kind of knew I had to do it. And, all these years, 60 years, but, my question is, how common is it to be able to give up without any help of the various, agencies that can help you? And I don't feel tempted at all. In fact, I feel better than in my life than I ever had.
I mean, I did get help. I couldn't have done it without AA, actually. Well, I don't know. Maybe I could have. But at that point in my life, I needed other people. I needed tools that I didn't know I had, that I did have. It was just shown to me what I had inside. But no, I needed AA to get clean. So that was my experience. I don't go to AA anymore. I actually do drink socially. I was sober for 10 years and I was in AA for 5 years. So my story is a little bit different. I think everybody's experience with alcoholism is different. And, but I am so grateful for finding, and for me, it was necessary to find AA meetings in English because I was learning Spanish. And so that I needed to really deepen into, within my native language. That was my experience.
And within that particular group, there were some expats, and actually, were
most of them.
Most of them were expats.
Oh, right? I was 24, 25, and the majority, like everyone there, was older white people from the United States and Canada who were in those rooms, who were living there, you know, 6 months out of the year, and they had like 20, 30 years of sobriety, and I was like 2 days, I cannot comprehend. The barrier, like it just seemed so far from what was possible.
Rich, thank you so much for calling. Let's take another call. Lyric in Blanchardville, thank you for calling.
Larry, you're always so good with your interviews, and this is one of the most exciting interviews I've heard. My daughter's a librarian near Boulder, Colorado. This book would be so good for youth to read. And is there a way that sometime there'd be a way to have a tape of this program where if somebody wanted to send it to libraries along with a book, they could do that so that if they were, say, high schoolers who graduated during COVID and they're more isolated, that they could see the importance of this book? Your speaker is incredible. She's such a good role model for how to be a positive person. I'm so excited you interviewed her. Thank you for both of you very much for being a positive light in what's going on in the world today, okay?
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lyric. There kind of is a way that the show is available because it's a podcast. We make it into a podcast. And so anybody can go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry, not too long after the show. What is it, Lee? Maybe an hour or two, something like that. And that is available at the Larry Mueller Show. Today's date, get the podcast for it. And so, Larry, you can get a hold of your, but I see your point, and it's well taken. It's something that I hope a lot of people read, and I hope your book, and I hope a lot of people, I know a lot of people are listening to this show, but I know also that a lot of people listen to the podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great resource.
It's a great resource. So thank you so much for your comments, Lyric. I really appreciate it.
And it is in libraries.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It can be.
In other cities. I know for sure it's in the Madison public libraries, but I do know that you can just call the library and ask them for it too. You can get it.
Yeah, and so it's something to think about, Lyric, especially with your daughter, I believe, who's a librarian out in Colorado. We actually get calls from Colorado once in a while.
Hmm.
A lot of people listen online, too, so to the show as it's going on. I think New Zealand, or maybe it was Germany, are the two the furthest calls that we've had. Well, there's still a little time. You can join in, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can go ahead and email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And we've got a caller coming up, and we'll get to that caller in just a minute. I want to go back to this whole business about when you were pregnant, you saw things differently. When you found out you were pregnant, you found out things, you saw things differently. And others didn't know the change in your life.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you find out this thing that changes everything, right? Like I was in denial. Carlos was certain I was pregnant. I was like, I am not. And so then when I finally found out that I was, you know, walking around, it was fascinating. Just be like, you know, everyone who didn't know, and nobody knew because I hadn't told anyone, was going on with their life, and they were treating me the same, and yet this, my whole life was changing. And it gives perspective too when I walk around. Yeah, I don't know what people are dealing with. I don't know what they just found out that morning. My mom taught me to do that with drivers. Like when a driver like cuts me off, instead of getting mad, I'm like, oh my gosh, what if they're rushing to their hospital because they just got a phone call? You know, like I get super compassionate instead of angry because you just don't know what's going on for people. And that was one of those times where it was happening to me and I got to experience it on the other side.
And you would look at people, you'd look at their faces and try to find the power in those faces?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Like just the power of connection when I was feeling lonely and isolated, like instead of feeling bad for myself or you know, in my own fear. And I was terrified, literally. Well, like I was like, what am I doing? I'm living in Mexico. I'm teaching English. I don't have insurance. I'm living in a studio apartment. Like I didn't even have a TV. Like how was I going to get a crib? And like, I just couldn't comprehend. I was like not feeling like I could do motherhood. And then I would connect with someone like on the bus. That's what I called them, love bursts. And I would look at someone and I would just imagine the people that loved them and then that they had a world that was beautiful. And it kind of reminded me that I'm not alone. I'm not, you know, it's not just about me. Like there's a whole world out there and there's a lot of love.
Kind of a cool way to look at it. Ben in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Ben.
Hi. I really appreciate the show. I've been in recovery for a long time, and I suffered with mental illness, depression, which also got me into recovery at the time, and I was a religious person, and I have found healing through recovery, which doesn't involve this spirituality aspect. So there have been callers that have called in kind of bent on the, you know, on the spiritual nature, but I find psychology as well as the founders of AA made it clear that they recognized that there were atheists and agnostics in AA, and they never wanted to provide a barrier or a you know, a separate class of people in recovery. Like holding people to a bar that you needed to be spiritual or religious. So there may be some people that just don't know that. So there are many of us in recovery that are simply agnostic or atheist that get a great benefit from recovery.
Ben, thank you so much for calling. And Sarah, I'm sure you have a comment.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I actually... it's not all about God. And I sometimes feel like I use the word God too much in the book that might throw people off because nowadays I use universe and energy more. But back then, that's the word I used. So I wanted to be true to that. But no, there's a lot of ways to get help for recovery. And AA is not the only way either. Like, yes, AA is open to a lot of different people. The book Quit Like a Woman by Holly Whitaker, super powerful book, and just turns things around when we look at who we're serving and how we're lifting people up. So I just encourage people, if you are struggling at all, there are so many people who want to talk about it, who want to help, who are open, and it's on your timeline and this is your story too, but there are people out there who want to share their stories to help.
What are you most proud of when thinking about this time in your life?
I'm so proud of the fact that I was able to shift my thought process about how I thought my life was going to be and be open to what my life was becoming and not try to hold on to my idea of this isn't the way it's supposed to be. And the minute I had that thought, I was able to be like, but I don't know what's meant for me. And so, like, how can I be open? That's what I'm most proud of, because that takes me through any situation in my life.
Well, I tell you what, you have written a wonderful book.
Thank you, Larry.
And I hope a lot of people probably have already read the book, but I hope a lot, many more thousands read it. Thank you so much, Sarah, for being with us today. It's a real pleasure to talk with you and about your life, and I hope we can talk again down the road. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sarah Alvarado is the author of this memoir. It's titled Dreaming in Spanish, An Unexpected Love Story in Puerto Vallarta. It was so great to have her with us today. And believe me, we did not get through everything that was in the book. And so if you think you've heard it all now, you've not. Okay? And if you thought we were going to be talking about how to move to a different country, we're not. We're going to be there's a little problem. We're going to be taking an open line, and we'll be getting your thoughts about what other programs, maybe other books, maybe other topics. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We'll be back right after the news.